Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Marty Johnson reporting. Fighting continues in Ukraine today between government forces and Russian-backed separatists just hours before a ceasefire aimed at halting the conflict is set to take effect. That ceasefire goes into force at 12.01 a.m. Sunday local time. It comes hours and days after leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France, and Germany agreed to the truce.
Я хочу, щоб ні в кого не було жодних ілюзій.
Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko warns his people there should be no illusions that there is still a long way to go before peace is achieved. Fighting in eastern Ukraine was especially intense Friday in the strategically important area around Debaltseve, with at least 26 people killed, including Ukrainian soldiers and civilians. The UN Security Council will meet tomorrow for an emergency session to shore up the ceasefire and vote on a Russian draft resolution calling on all parties to implement the deal. Nigeria's Gombe state is under 24-hour curfew in response to a Boko Haram attack that sparked raging gunfire today. A spokesman for the governor announced the move, saying while fighting is taking place in Gombe City, the curfew is in effect across the entire state of the same name. Also, that residents are to remain indoors until further notice as security forces try to track down the gunman and restore order. Channel Television reports that the militants set fire to a military barracks and circulated a letter warning residents not to come out for upcoming general elections. The United Nations is formally ending its support for a Democratic Republic of Congo military offensive against a rebel group because the DRC generals leading the effort are accused of human rights violations. A UN official said Friday the DRC had 2 weeks to remove General Bruno Mandevu and General Fall Sekabwe, but failed to make the changes. Letters are now being sent to the DRC authorities about cessation of support. This is VOA News. Sierra Leone has quarantined a neighborhood in the capital, Freetown, following the emergence of several new cases of Ebola. The coastal district of Aberdeen, home to slums and upscale hotels, was shut down Friday. A quarantine is a major setback for the West African country that had the most cases of Ebola in the recent outbreak of the disease in West Africa, which killed almost 9,000 people. Meantime, a World Health Organization mission is going to Saudi Arabia this week to take preventative measures against a possible upsurge in Middle East respiratory syndrome, or MERS, coronavirus. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The last large MERS corona outbreak was in May and June of last year. The World Health Organization reports new cases of the disease now are being reported on an almost daily basis. WHO manager of food safety, Peter Ben Mbarek, says people mainly get the virus through contact with camels or through close contact with people who have the disease, but he tells VOA little is known about what causes the disease in camels or why it is centered in this region.
It might be a combination of a mix of climatic conditions, traditions, ways of interacting with camels.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Authorities in southwestern Pakistan say security forces are searching for a polio vaccination team that disappeared Friday in Balochistan province. The team included two vaccinators, two security personnel, and a driver. Local health workers and relatives fear the team has been kidnapped by militants. Meantime, in the northwestern part of Pakistan, officials say a gunman ambushed another polio vaccination team, killing the driver. 85% of the world's polio cases last year were diagnosed in Pakistan. President Obama has signed an executive order aimed at encouraging companies and organizations to share more information about cybersecurity threats with the government and each other.
It'll call for a common set of standards, including protections for privacy and civil liberties, so the government can share threat information with these hubs more easily. And it can help make it easier for companies to get the classified cybersecurity threat information that they need to protect their companies.
Mr. Obama signed the order at a White House-sponsored conference on cybersecurity and consumer protection at Stanford University in California. The executive order follows several high-profile hack attacks against U.S.-based companies and some government agencies in the last year. A report issued by media watchdog Reporters Without Borders says press freedom declined around the world last year. The annual World Press Freedom Index said conditions in two-thirds of 180 countries surveyed worsened in 2014. Finland got the high mark for the fifth year. The Middle East and North Africa are in last place, and the U.S. plummeted in ratings, dropping three spots to 49th. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
It became very clear that we will support the process of the Auditor General's report, and the President has made it abundantly clear.
In Sierra Leone, an Auditor General's report suggests millions of dollars to help fight Ebola have been misappropriated.
The government decided a curfew because there was two explosions that occurred in Bifa. That's the town where this happened.
The government of Niger bolsters security along its border with Chad following a recent Boko Haram attack.
The ruling party, which is the ANC, is intolerant, and it has converted a democratic state into a police state wherein police are used to resolve political differences.
And South African opposition lawmakers disrupt President Jacob Zuma's State of the Nation address. We'll have details, those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Sierra Leonean Anti-Corruption Commission has launched an investigation into misappropriated funds aimed to help fight the Ebola outbreak. According to Abdoulaye Bareti, a spokesman for the government, the Auditor General's report says there are no supporting documents to show how $5.7 million were spent by the health ministry. Bareti told me earlier that the government supports actions that will lead to the prosecution of officials involved in the scandal.
The government has just came out with a decisive press release from State House, wherein it became very clear that we will support the process of the Auditor General's report, and the President has made it abundantly clear that whosoever is found culpable of misappropriating any funds related to the fight against the Ebola virus will have to face the full penalty of the law. So as it is now, the report was just yesterday presented to Parliament as per procedure. They are going to look at it. But for us, though, what remains very clear is the state institutions that are responsible for accountability and transparency in our own governance strategy, that is the Anti-Corruption Commission, as well as the Audit Service Sierra Leone, the government will continue to support them so that they can continue to do a marvelous work.
Well, some people have expressed concern that the government had to do more to bring these alleged perpetrators to book immediately and find out where these monies went and be returned to the people. What do you say to that?
Absolutely. I agree with them, and that is the thinking of President Koroma as well, because in the press release that came out from State House today, that point was lucidly illustrated. That for now, we encourage the public to be patient whilst the report is being tendered in Parliament. But in the meantime, though, the government has renewed its commitment to support any due process that will prosecute anybody that is found culpable. Because since President Koroma came to power, his mantra has always been zero tolerance to corruption, as well as his administration will not condone any sacred cow. And he has demonstrated that in the past when very high-profile people, including ministers, were sacked and later presented to the Anti-Corruption Commission. So this is going to be another litmus case.
Well, some Sierra Leoneans I spoke with said $5.7 million is too much of a money for the Anti-Corruption Agency not to be directed to start immediate investigation into this. That's by the report presented to Parliament, and they want the government to act rather than releasing a press statement about this. What do you say to such concerns being expressed by Sierra Leoneans?
Part of our own democracy in Sierra Leone is how do we continue to support and strengthen state institutions so that within our own separation of powers, government shouldn't be seen to even give instructions to the Anti-Corruption Commission, because what is on record, though, is the anti-corruption has one of the strongest legislations in this West Africa as revised in 2008. So that is why for us, we are waiting. The executive cannot interfere in the functions of the legislature, where in our constitution is very clear that when the auditor general audits any public funds, such a report must go first to parliament, and parliament will then advise. But that notwithstanding, though, the Anti-Corruption Commission is concurrently investigating the report as well, so that whosoever is found culpable will be prosecuted accordingly.
What message do you want to pass on to Sierra Leoneans following this auditor's report?
Well, it is a huge concern, and the message we are giving to every Sierra Leonean, both here and in the diaspora, including our development partners, is that the government will never condone such acts. And the president, even prior to the Auditor General's report, the president has been entreating everybody that Ebola money is blood money, and that whosoever interferes with it will have to face the full penalty of the law.
Abdoulaye Barrette is the spokesman for the Sierra Leonean government. He spoke with me from Freetown. A prominent member of the ruling Nigerian Party for Democracy and Socialism, or PNDS, Taraya, says an investigation carried out by the country's security officials unearthed a cache of weapons used by Boko Haram militants. This after the government imposed a curfew following a recent cross-border attack by the Boko Haram militants in Difa, a town close to Niger's border with neighboring Chad. Sani Iro, the communications director for PNDS Taraya, told me that 40 suspects linked to the Boko Haram militants have been arrested.
When Boko Haram launched the first attack in our country and was pushed out by our army, the government decided a curfew because there was two explosions that occurred in Difa. That's the town where this happened. So the government decided a curfew in the area, and then the military launched an investigation in the houses and in some places, and they discovered many armaments. They arrested about 40 persons who are really linked with Boko Haram.
How reassured or how assured are Nigerians close to the border where Boko Haram launched the attacks into Niger recently?
Now, really, after these arrests, after all these arrests, really things have become calm now. For the first time, people really get afraid and begin to leave the place, but there's no more movement out of the area. The movement of population has really stopped.
There were reports of about 7,000 people who left the Difa area to areas such as Zindere for fear that Boko Haram might come back. Has the government made assurances to them that they will prevent future Boko Haram attacks?
We can say 4,000 or 5,000 of people who left the area. But as I told you, the government really now is calling to everybody to really become calm and to because the army is controlling everything now. And I said to you and told you that since 24 hours, there have been nothing that can be feared but the people. So now the movement of the population have stopped completely. Nobody's living anymore in these places. So the government has really given the assurance, and there are really media intervention of the government to call people to go back to their place and to really don't be afraid of anything more.
Has the government increased the presence of the military in the Difa areas where the Boko Haram attacked?
Oh, yes. Before this time, the government really was aware of the danger that threatening this area, and the government really sent many militaries down there. And now with this, there is another contingent of military that have been sent there. And you know that there is more than 3,000 Chadian militaries that are in the same area now. So you see, with this junction between our army and the Chadian army, really the place is now secured.
Sani Iro is the communications director for the ruling Nigerian Party for Democracy and Socialism. He spoke with me from the capital, Niamey. A one-week retreat for members of the Ugandan ruling party, or NRM, is due to conclude today amid allegations that some members of the party are proposing extending the current term of the president and parliament for two more years. Government officials deny any such proposal is being discussed. Charles Mpaji is a Ugandan TV journalist and also works for the Electoral Coalition for Electoral Democracy in Uganda. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Kampala to find out more about this retreat.
Well, people have been following it because this retreat is happening exactly 1 year after a similar retreat at the same venue in February last year, whose major outcome was a campaign for a push to have President Museveni run not just for another term next year, but run as a sole candidate from the National Resistance Movement. So heading to Changwanzi, people were looking to see how does it advance the Museveni sole candidature, and especially after the complete humiliation of the former number two man in the queue, former Prime Minister and Secretary General of the NRM, Amama Mbabazi. So the view was, how is this retreat going to be different from the one that happened last year, and how does it continue to advance? Many people expected that it would just be an opportunity to advance the interest of President Yoweri Museveni to run for another term in 2016. So what we have seen over the last 1 week is they have made an attempt to discuss a few serious issues, but also a little bit lost in those internal party politics. Most important thing that I think has come out of this is a discussion about the state of independence. They had a discussion and have tabled an amendment to the constitution that would allow independents not to lose their seat should they choose or be given time to either move from one party to another or move from being independent to joining a political party. That's a significant development. They've also had a discussion on other constitutional reforms and electoral reforms, things that are holding back planning for the next election in 2016.
Charles, there are allegations that in this retreat, a lot has been talked about in terms of trying to extend both the current term of the president and of parliament. We understand government has denied those allegations. But how seriously should people take those allegations? Because many things have emanated from this retreat and gone to turned into law.
The official position is what we know now, that the NRM and the government says that's not a matter for discussion. But we also know that heading to Changwanzi, there's a group of pro-NRM MPs or NRM MPs who are beginning to move this idea. Now, for people who don't understand Ugandan politics, these are things that you take lightly. Why people should take it seriously is because we have the history of the country where fundamental changes are introduced into our constitution and the governance process when they start as not serious issues. We had an amendment that removed presidential term limits. When that discussion started, no one expected that it would have any traction because it was the first time that Article of the Constitution 1052 of the Ugandan 1995 Constitution was going to be implemented for the first time. And it kept gaining currency along the way until term limits were removed in 2005 to allow President Museveni to run for a third elected term in 2006. So if you begin hearing discussions like removal of the age limit for the president, extension of the life of this government, and for maybe 3 years to allow for these reforms, they might appear to be unserious proposals. They might be dismissed on face value, but they are things that, from the history of this country, are things that sometimes might actually be rooted in some serious consideration. The second bit is that I suspect that sometimes these such proposals, whereas they might appear, are brought in to create a trade-off on other reforms that the ruling party wants to push through parliament. So it comes in as a serious but important discussion, and then as a compromise, it gets lost because people spend a lot of time thinking about that other proposal and not thinking about the proposal that fundamentally impacts the election.
That was Charles Mpaji of the Electoral Coalition for Electoral Democracy in Uganda. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. The South African Parliament descended into utter chaos when opposition lawmakers prevented President Jacob Zuma from delivering his annual State of the Nation speech. Security officers entered the parliament and forcibly removed members of the opposition economic freedom fighters, including their leader, Julius Malema. Malema spoke with VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu about the incident in parliament.
In South Africa, the ruling party, which is the ANC, is intolerant, and it has converted a democratic state into a police state, wherein police are used to resolve political differences, particularly in a chamber of parliament. We think that yesterday it was a sad day for our democracy in South Africa, and we hope that South Africans will wake up and see the ANC, which is the ruling party, for what it is.
But will you be challenging what happened yesterday in the courts?
We are going to our constitutional court here in South Africa, and we want the court to declare that what happened yesterday is unlawful and should not repeat itself. And those of our members who were beaten up are going to be suing the parliament, because parliament owes it to members of parliament to protect them.
How many members of your party were injured?
Were almost 7 people injured, and we've got one who is still in hospital today because she's badly injured.
But Honorable Malema, your critics might say maybe the wrong forum, since it was the State of the Nation address to raise your concerns about the alleged corruption.
There is no correct platform, because the South African president never comes to parliament. The president doesn't take parliament serious. He sometimes goes AWOL, and he may not come back to parliament until the State of the Nation. He came yesterday hoping that no one will hold him accountable. The reason why he avoids parliament, it is precisely because he doesn't want to account for his corruption. He continues to be law unto himself, and he is untouchable here in South Africa.
Mr. Malema, your supporters might actually say maybe you are focusing too much on Mr. Zuma, not the ideals of the EFF, which is to empower the majority black South Africans.
Our supporters are very happy. Our voters are very happy. Actually, the EFF is one of the fastest growing organizations in South Africa. They know very well that our 7 non-negotiable cardinal pillars are the ones that the EFF leadership has prioritized, and we continue to speak to those issues unashamedly.
Julius Malema is the leader of South Africa's opposition economic freedom fighters. He spoke with VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu from Cape Town. Zambia and Zimbabwe have jointly launched the Kaza Univisa. The initiative will give tourists the opportunity to visit both countries with a single visa. Doris Kofi is the senior marketing officer at the Zambia Tourism Board. She joins us live via telephone link up from the capital, Lusaka. Good evening, Ms. Kofi.
Good evening.
Well, Ms. Kofi, tell me more about this Kaza Univisa's initiative.
The Kaza Univisa initiative, first of all, you need to understand what the Kaza is. The Kaza is the Kavango Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, which spans among 5 countries, namely Zambia, Zimbabwe, Angola, Botswana, and Namibia. So the Kaza Univisa actually stems out of the Kaza PSPA, and Zambia and Zimbabwe offered to pilot the project, which will roll out to the other 3 countries within the Kaza area. So what the Univisa is all about is It's one single visa regime for both countries at the moment under the pilot project, Zambia and Zimbabwe. So if a tourist comes into Zambia or enters from the other side, which is Zimbabwe, once they get the Kaza Uni visa, that visa is good to enter Zambia. They don't have to pay again. And it issues on a validity of 30 days, and it comes with multiple entries between the two countries. To begin with, into extending into Botswana, it's allowable on day on a day visit. But if one has to overnight in Botswana, then they have to pay for a new or a fresh Kaza Uni visa
either
Zambia or Zimbabwe. So that's the Kaza Uni visa.
Ms. Kofi, how soon will the rest of those in the area be involved in this Uni visa?
Well, the pilot phase is 6 months, and this runs from 28 November 2014 when we launched. And the pilot phase is critical because we have to monitor and evaluate and ensure that if there's any challenges with the system, these have to be resolved and, you know, rectify and then allow the other three countries to, you know, enter the Kaza Uni visa regime. So after 6 months, we will be able to give further information whether we are rolling out immediately to the rest of the three countries within the Kaza area or whatever other step will be taken, we will advise. But we are in the pilot phase and it's working very well.
What do you think are the prospects of this Kaza visa and how will this be beneficial to these countries, pilot as it is?
It's a regional integration because if you look at today's modern traveler, when they come into a region, they want to see as many countries as they can. So the fact that, you know, visas, it's one of the bottlenecks, actually, or challenges that people face, in you know, that deter them from seeing as many countries as possible. So if we can get all these five countries accessible on one single visa system, it means that people can come into this region and have access to the five countries and see more, because each of the five countries have different offerings.
Now, let me ask you this. The country that issues the visa gets the revenue generated from the processing of the visa. Will that country keep that funds, or will those funds be shared among the countries involved in this Kaza Uni visa?
Under the pilot phase, which is between Zambia and Zimbabwe, the agreement, we had to sign a memorandum of understanding between the two countries before the launch took place. And the agreement under the MOU is each country keeps the revenue of what they process.
How committed are these leaders to ensuring a success of this project?
They're very, very committed because I would like to allude the launch as a sign of their commitment because the Uni visa for the region has been under discussion for over 10 years within the SADC region. Now, the SADC region spans over 15 countries, but we had agreements and disagreements and so forth. So, if we narrow down to the Kaza area, which is five countries, and Zambia and Zimbabwe, we're happy to pilot. Because if you recall, in 2013, the two countries co-hosted the United Nations World Tourism Organization General Assembly. And during that period, the two borders, the two countries agreed to open their visas to these visitors without having to pay any visas, as long as they were strong enough that they were attending the General Assembly. So that seamless border crossing actually gave us a taste of good things about a Uni visa. And here we are, 1 year after the General Assembly, the Kaza Uni visa is being piloted by Zambia and Zimbabwe.
Thank you very much. Doris Kofi is the Senior Marketing Officer at the Zambia Tourism Board. She joined us live from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
JP the production.
Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. Them girls just they feel me now. Cause I get some money, then they feel me now. But then they do me anyhow. I don't get some money, they wanna get down. They wanna hold me for ransom. Cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They wanna know where I come from. I they run to from Lagos to London. All the blessings and love I they see just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? I say all the blessings and love I they see just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? They hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. De calema, sagacité, equilibre, paro tema, de cale, cricata, 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 pam, pam. Somunto, somunto, calopere, calopere, calopere. All the blessings and love by the sea, just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? I say all the blessings and love by the sea, just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? They hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. Now designer wear now. I be take all the girls on a wear now. I'm the man of the year now. And my music they blow everywhere now. All the way from KD. The whole world now just they hear me. My haters just they fear me. And nobody feed them would hear me. All the blessings and love I they see, just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? I say all the blessings and love I they see, just they make me they shout hallelujah. Eh? They hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. They won't hold me for ransom, cause I'm young and I'm rich and I'm handsome. Oh yeah, shake body. Oh yeah, move body. Make you ring alarm. Oh yeah, shake body. De calema, de calema, cricata, cricata, paro de equilibre, 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 paro de mar. Oya, shake body, oya, move body, make you ring alarm. Oya, shake body.
What do you want from the bank? I just say come from the bank. And I got money to throw it, throw it. So everybody, oh yeah, oh wait, oh wait. Rockin' the body, rockin' the body, rockin' the body for me. Keep rockin' the body, rockin' the body for me.
Here I go, oh here I go. It's time to show me your love.
Without
get my blanket for you.
Baby, oh, yeah. Ooh, baby, oh, yeah. Corner, corner, baby.
my mama, and I go tell my papa, and I go tell him say, you be waka waka baby, you be chuku chuku baby.
don't even.
Music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Welcome, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to share my reflections on U.S. foreign policy towards Africa. And every week, I pay opinion on African opinions on attitude towards Africa. Every week, you look at the headlines and you see what the telecasters, scholars, journalists, and the leading people around the world are saying or doing about the United States. This week, I want to share my reflections on what is happening with respect to the U.S. and Africa. Now, when you look at the events, you can see that the president is anticipating the visit of the Pope to the United States, and that's going to be a very important development, not only for the United States and the people of the United States, but it's going to have relevance for the rest of the world, because that visit of Pope Francis has implications for Africa, because there are many Africans who are Catholics, Muslims, Jews, and other faith communities. So a major event is going to take place when the Pope comes here, and all those Africans who are Catholics, Muslims, Christians from other faith communities and other religious communities will be looking on. I want to emphasize this visit as a point of departure to address the recent developments with regard to the prayer breakfast in the United States here, when President Barack Hussein Obama addressed the participants of that event and the implications it has for America, for American relations with faith communities abroad, and it has relevance for the visit of the Pope when he comes here to share his thoughts about his papacy and the implication it has for America and for Africa. Now, when you connect the dots, you see how this world manifests itself historically and how human beings are really creatures in a major drama beyond their imaginations. When the President Barack Hussein Obama was born in 61, the American president was a Catholic. It was a major breakthrough in the history of the United States that a Catholic was the president of the United States. Young Obama was just a kid born in the United States when John Fitzgerald Kennedy was president. Those Africans who are listening to this broadcast were not even born at that time, because the older generation of Africans were celebrating the victory of independence under Kwame Nkrumah. And in 1960, all the Africans were celebrating Africa at the UN. This was a big moment for Africa. Ghana became independent. Nigerians, a big African country, became independent. Today, when you look back at America's relations with Africa, you connect the dots you can see how at that time the Africans were gradually beginning to know America. The United States was affecting Africa in a number of areas. Under Kennedy, a Catholic president, first Catholic president of America, was bringing a large number of Africans to the United States. President Obama is a beneficiary of that narrative. And I'm sure that the scholars and researchers around the Pope are very much aware of these connections. How John Kennedy was president, when he was running for the president, religious bigotry was not dead in America. There were still some elements who were suspicious of the Pope and the new president being Catholic. America has traveled a long way. For America to be at this point, those African Catholics who are young and didn't know their story can learn from their priests and other people in anticipation of the Pope's visit to the United States, how this is very much related to the United States' relations with Africa. God, in his wisdom, if you don't believe in God, you're maybe atheist, but I may believe in God. God is the one who makes videos. I see him the ultimate maker of videos, not Nollywood, as we have in Africa today, or Bollywood in India, or as we most joyously celebrate Hollywood in the United States. Only the ultimate maker of video, God himself, could have written this drama. Americans are going to see Prime Minister Netanyahu coming from Israel to America at a very interesting moment for the people of the Israeli state in world history, because for 1,888 years, almost 2,000 years, the Jewish people had no homes. The Zionist movement worked very hard after a Jew was humiliated in France because his loyalty was questioned by Frenchmen. Lo and behold, through hard work and devotion, the Jewish people created a country of their own. And that identity and celebration is still in contest. The Africans would have been affected by the decision of the British government if they had transported the Jews to Uganda. Uganda would have been the bone of contention. Uganda would have been an other South Africa, just like Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Malawi, which would have been both Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia, Northern Rhodesia, and Nyasaland, and then South Africa. All these stories were connected to European colonialism, and they affected the black people and human destiny. So when the Pope comes here, he is mindful of that history. So when he talks to Americans, he has his own story. Most importantly, that's why I say that God is the movie maker. When President Kennedy was the president of the United States, they were certain apprehensive about having the Pope to be in close contact with the president who was Catholic. Lo and behold, God, in his powerful way of doing things, will take a man from Argentina to be the Pope. And when he comes here, he will connect and order dots. And those rank-and-file Americans who are Catholics will be anticipating to the words of the Pope when he has a very powerful moment in history to connect these dots. And I stop with this narrative today for you in Africa who are listening to the voice of America.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders in Sierra Leone say, when you don't get along with a hunter in town, don't follow him to the bush. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
American leadership remains essential not only to tackling today's threats, but also to addressing the global challenges that will define the nature of security for our children and grandchildren, said U.S. National Security Advisor Susan Rice. Our 2015 strategy is guided by the same four enduring national interests we laid out in the 2010 National Security Strategy: security, prosperity, values, and a rules-based international order, Ms. Rice said, indicating that the strategy aims to strengthen the foundations of America's political, economic, and military powers so that we can surmount the challenges of today and capture the opportunities of tomorrow. Ms. Rice outlined the four ways in which the 2015 National Security Strategy advances the core interests of the United States. The first builds on a more secure homeland and a national defense that is second to none, with a dynamic global security posture in which we employ our unique capabilities, forge diverse coalitions, and support local partners to counter terrorism, enhance cybersecurity, and address the dangers of nuclear proliferation, pandemic diseases, and climate change. The second is to expand prosperity by using our renewed economic strength, our resurgent economy, and improved energy security to bolster the global financial system, advance an open international economic order, and reduce inequality and poverty. The third is to defend democracy and human rights, combat corruption, promote open government, and stand with civil society, she said. We do so by living our values at home, growing the ranks of capable democratic states, and defending universal rights. The fourth is to leverage American leadership to uphold the liberal international order, which has served the world well for 70 years, by reinforcing rules of the road and strengthening and diversifying our alliances and partnerships in every region of the world. Our unparalleled leadership is grounded in America's enduring strengths and guided by a clear sense of purpose, Ms. Rice said. We rally partners to enact sustainable solutions when challenges arise. We strive to set the highest standards by our own example. And we lead with our eyes fixed firmly on the future, alert to opportunities to make the world safer and increasingly just.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.